the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 346 on the podcast today. At last, I've managed to get Carl Asprey, the CEO of Atlas Development and Support Services, or ADSS is the ticker. Now, this is the second stock in my £1 million penny stock punt experiment. My first one was African Potash, and now this one. And I've got to say, I'm glad Carl's come on to communicate what they're doing with the company, and I'll be chatting to Carl about that. Plus, I have Smudge Dan on the podcast. Now, listen. A lot of people recommended Dan to me because, as you know, I've been trying to get some more traders on, successful traders, investors, so we can learn about how they do what they do. And Dan was suggested by several people on Twitter saying, get this guy on. He knows his stuff. He knows all what he's about. And one of the guys said he also has over 3% in this company and pretty much around 3% of this company. So he holds quite big positions. And I asked Dan about his record, and this is how he's done. In the last 12 months, he has managed to gain a 1,300% return on his money. That is good, isn't it? Hey, so you know, you imagine you put your money in a bank. What are you getting? 1%? Something like that? So even if you put in a tracker fund, you know, you're getting what? 5, 6, 7, 8% if you beat the market? And people say, oh, I'm consistently... You get these hedge fund managers. Yes, well, I consistently beat the market every year by returning around about 8%. What? Dan... He's done 1,300%. Yeah, he knows his stuff. And do you know what? He teaches me quite a few things that, you know, it's worth noting. So, you know, by all means, don't tune out after the ADSS podcast. If you want to know how to trade and invest in stocks, listen to Dan's chart after that. I say chart, I mean chat. I also have today's penny stock with potential. And this podcast is dedicated to BOS1, or Boss1, who gave me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. By all means, click the link here just below on sharepickers.com. If you give me a 5-star rating and review, I'll dedicate the podcast to you. Joining me on the podcast right now, I'm glad to say, I've been trying for a while. It's CEO of Atlas Developments and Support Services, Carl Asprey. Thank you for joining me, Carl.
Hello. Thank
now,
you.
Yeah, you've gone through a bit of a change, and you've released an RNS today, and it seems to me, essentially, like you are slowly sort of exiting, contracting sort of market in favour of a growing market. Is that right on a broad line? I mean, you know, first of all, if you want, go through the outline of the business, but is that right to a certain extent?
I suppose there's some truth to that. I think we said in the trading statement that the volatility in the oil price has really resulted in a very difficult oil services market, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. Most of our large clients, the likes of Tullow, Genel, and prospective clients like Glencore, they've seen share price falling by 90%, balance sheet worries, and so CapEx and OpEx budgets are being slashed across the region. And there's a direct correlation on their CapEx and OpEx and their propensity to spend on services like ourselves. So we as a management team have been very active this year trying to look at diversification measures, as well as what you'd expect in cost cutting and really focusing our asset base on a more prospective, more profitable regions, okay. like Ethiopia that we announced today.
Yes, because you were pretty much based, I suppose, were you in Kenya in the oil services sector? In fact, give us a broad outline as to what you were doing predominantly, and then now we'll update people as to what you're doing now.
Oh, absolutely, thank you. We were offering a broad range of services, not necessarily only to the oil sector, but in Kenya, if one had to be very broad-based, the Kenyan demand was very oil and gas related. And our business in Ethiopia, which has been since 2008 as well, has been very much supporting mining services, in Ethiopian case, fertilizer or potash. And so although we do the same services in each country, there's been a very, very volatile oil and gas sector this year. And so our Kenyan revenues have been dropping dramatically, as we've stated in one or two announcements this year. Whereas the Ethiopian fertilizer services are actually, you know, set to grow for us. And we announced a joint venture a few weeks ago with a very, very large construction company in Ethiopia, called Orchid Business Group, really very impressive joint venture partner for us. They've got 2,000 employees, lots of capacity, lots of assets. And together with them, we really broaden our service offering within Ethiopia. And as I said earlier, Ethiopia, very exciting because very high GDP growth, and also not really oil and gas or mining based. So much more sustainable GDP growth, in our opinion.
Okay, so the oil and gas services sector, are you exiting that, or are you just maintaining contracts that you see as profitable?
We only bid on contracts that have return measures that we that we see fit. We could win lots of contracts if we bid loss making contracts, but obviously that's not a sustainable business model. So I wouldn't say we're exiting oil services, but certainly there's a hiatus period as the demand really is very, very little at the moment for an oil service provider in East Africa. So our assets get reallocated to the mining services that we do in Ethiopia. And at the moment, we have some assets moving from Kenya into Ethiopia to be redeployed. And as and when things improve in oil services, we just redeploy our assets back into the oil services. So we maintain some flexibility in that way.
Okay. Take us to the joint venture that you just mentioned there, you touched on with Orchid. Like I said, it's quite a big corporation there. I mean, have you contracts going on with them now, or are you starting to, you know, formalize a sort of a relationship there?
We've had a relationship for a year where we've done work together with them, and we've now formalized this joint venture where services will be bid for as a joint venture. And also all their construction contracts, inevitably the service element of their construction contracts will move towards us as a joint venture company. It's clear that Orchid, who also recently signed a joint venture with Avenge, a large South African construction group. So Orchid is the key construction player in Ethiopia. So we're very lucky that we've developed a relationship over many years to the point that we can work as a team. Because Ethiopia, a lot of credibility is given to people that have a local flavor and a local presence within the team, more so than most countries in Africa.
Okay. And the news out today is you're creating an industrial division with initial focus on consumer-based industrial products. So was that linked through Orchid or not? Was that a separate thing?
No, it's separate to Orchid. What the management sought to do was to try and diversify service revenues. Service revenues, by their nature, are very contractual and therefore very lumpy. And we were looking for a diversification from these very volatile services revenues with something a little bit more non-cyclical. But I also wanted to make it clear to shareholders that we wouldn't be chasing to build a mine or to go and drill for oil, because a lot of people have very, very specific views that they don't want more people trying to build mines or look for oil in Africa. They've got enough of them. So our industrial division was built and focused predominantly on consumer-based industrials. So the biggest driver of growth in East Africa is the African consumer, and also one of the biggest government pushes in most of these countries is local manufacturing. And we can blend those two and have a pipeline of great projects that can be very value accretive. Obviously, a huge synergy there is we are JV with the biggest construction company in Ethiopia, so we can deliver a lot of the construction within our own company. So, that mitigates some of the risk of just doing a greenfield project in a country you've never been.
Yeah, because I was going to say, it's quite a change in your direction, isn't it? This kind of this building of this plant, basically, this industrial production plant. Is it straying outside your sort of circle of competence, do you think, or not?
Not really. It's almost a progression from the services division that we've supported other people's construction projects. We've done a JV with a large construction company, so we have construction, the services, and so the progression from that is eventually constructing your own sites and owning, and through that diversifying your revenue stream.
Okay. So take us through this then, exactly what's going to happen here. And what's the project called? Is it a Chancho project, isn't it?
It's called the Chancho project. A step back is that Ethiopia is one of the most exciting beer and beverage countries in the world at the moment. A meeting I had with Heineken last week, they said it's in their top three countries globally for investment. We've seen in the last 5 years, $500 million come in from international breweries, namely Diageo and Heineken. Heineken's gone from nothing to three breweries. They're doubling one of their breweries. Diageo has bought one brewery and has tripled the size of it. So very, very exciting beer country. I think in SAB's last results, they put a whole paragraph on Ethiopia and how excited they are about the prospects there. So the second derivative of beer is obviously barley, but also glass bottles. which of which all of them are imported from international places as far as Brazil to Saudi to China, or Ethiopia is bringing in glass bottles. There's a huge demand as a result, and there's a presentation pack I put on the website this morning which discusses some of this in detail for any of your listeners.
Yeah, well, I'd definitely send me that link as well, because I'll put that on my website. This is, I like the way you dropped the name Heineken there, Carl. Nice. You've been meeting with Heineken. Any other sort of big guys you've been meeting with or chatting with?
Yeah, so there's four major breweries in Ethiopia. We've met them all. In fact, I was doing a tour of the Heineken factory last week. Lovely, state-of-the-art, brand-new facility in Ethiopia. And really, the message from everyone, all the breweries in Ethiopia, is that we need a domestic producer of glass bottles. It sounds mundane, but it's a huge, our market research has showed that there's this huge demand for glass bottles. We've spent about 9 months doing feasibility work on the project, where we've ensured that we have our own raw material, which is silica sand and limestone and feldspar. We have land for the factory that's been allocated. We are now in the process of trying to sign offtake agreements. So this is a very well researched and well feasibility project that we've inserted into Atlas. And the meeting with Heineken last week, just to be clear, was a research meeting. It wasn't. I don't want to start any rumors about Heineken being an industrial partner. It was us doing research and us looking for offtake partners at this stage.
So the demand is there, and you've got in your notes there that the new production facility is expected to have a capacity to produce 105 million 330 mil bottles per annum. Obviously you must have predicted some kind of revenue from this. Can you say what kind of revenues you expect to get from this?
Yeah, so on slide 14 on the pack, which I'll send you later, we discuss some of the metrics. The revenue projection for 2019, which is the first year of full production, is in the region of $31 million. And then I put some basic valuation metrics. So what is the DCF, the discounted cash flows, are in the region of $70 million, and 6x 2020 EBITDA, which is what these packaging companies tend to trade on, in the region of 7x to 8x EBITDA. So 6x EBITDA would value this project at around $104 million.
Wow. So, I mean, that looks exciting. But like you said, it's commencing in 2019. Before then, obviously, you need to get the finances in order. How is that going to happen?
It's commencing in 2018 and full production is in 2019.
Oh, I see. Okay.
We have a staged program with a large number of milestones over the next 6 months. And that culminates in our application to the Development Bank of Ethiopia, who I've spent many months talking to about this project. So it's not the first time they've heard from us. By June next year, we should have our approval of our Development Bank loan of Ethiopia, which is in the region of $35 million and at about 8.5% interest rate. Well, currently it's 8.5% interest rate is what they lend to. So the vast majority of the equity will be done, of the investment will be done through debt. And then the remainder will be done through a combination of cash we have in the company and also potentially industrial partners.
Okay. Because it says total capital expenditure is around about $42 million. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah. Over the next 2.5 years.
Okay. And take us through the recent sort of the share placing, the share issue.
Share issue.
Yes,
right. So we've asked shareholders to increase the headroom to give the board flexibility to issue shares. We haven't actually announced a share issue.
No.
Obviously, this project is contingent. This project being purchased by Atlas is contingent on Atlas getting the headroom available. Because without that headroom, there'd be limited ability for Atlas to participate in this project going forward.
Yeah. And how much do you expect to raise from that?
I don't think we've announced any raise or any quantum of any raise. I think at this point it's just flexibility. I think I put in the slide pack that we'll end the year with $3 million in the bank on our current budgets, and we're not in a situation where we are forced into a raise anytime soon.
Yeah, so it commences the plant hopefully in 2018, so hopefully you start seeing some revenue come in. And then between now and then, You think everything you've got going with Orchid and other contracts will be enough to take you through to that?
Yeah, so they're two separate divisions. On the services side, we have incumbent projects in Ethiopia. It's a very exciting landscape for new project wins. I told you we're in discussion with pretty much all the potash players there and watching closely as they take their time to move to full production. So a lot of the awards of those projects, I understand people want announcements, but it's out of our hands. They're our client. But, you know, I think we're well placed to win work within the potash region on the services side. And on the industrial side, we've set out milestones on slide 15 of our pack, which just show what we have to be getting on with in the next 6 months. That gets us the loan, the $35 million loan from the Development Bank. And I mean, as I said before, the company will be doing, will be very cash flow accretive, this project, large revenue amounts and very profitable as well.
Yes, so it's quite an exciting time, isn't it? I mean, because, you know, you're not standing still. I mean, as you know, everyone's been affected in the oil and gas sector by the oil price slump. And, you know, some people have sat there and taken it and are suffering. But I can see you are moving forward. And do you feel now you are, you know, you're cutting costs, you're doing all the right things to take the company now, you know, or to create shareholder value?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's been a very tough year. We think with this new division and with the access to all the new projects we'll be looking at, in really the most exciting country in Africa, the future is quite bright for this industrial division. And the services, as you said, we've cut the cost to the point that the services doesn't burn cash. And, you know, there's lots of scope for services in Ethiopia. And as and when the oil and gas market returns into Kenya, we can always move back in there. At the moment, as I started off saying, the Kenyan services landscape is extremely, extremely difficult. But we can't, you know, if we were just to sit on that, the company, you know, wouldn't be around in a year or two. So it's much better that we move forward.
Excellent. Well, Carl, it's nice to hear from you. Obviously, you've been busy. I asked for a couple of questions. A bit late in the day, I asked for a couple of questions. But a couple of people said, why can't you communicate more with us? Because there are shareholders there. And so if a shareholder asks that, what would you say to them?
Well, I think there's some truth to that. And so I suppose there's, you know, some apologies from me for not being as you know, as open with everyone as I could have been. There's a combination of us really being in the middle of Ethiopia with no cell phones for many weeks at a time, as well as getting into difficult periods when we know we're due to announce something, and therefore our ability to communicate prior to that announcement is limited. I think people should expect now that the new vision has been made clear, you can expect and you should demand you know, much more regular updates and interviews from me.
Excellent. Well, I hope so. Like I said, I'm a shareholder, and when I first read updates about your company, I was into it, but then obviously the oil price struck. Luckily, I bought just after that, but I'm still a bit down on the share price. But I can see you sort of, you know, trying your best now to move in the right direction. So, Carl, with that in mind, sell me the company, or sell the company to anyone out there listening who's heard you now and thinks, yeah, I like the sound of this. Give us three bullet points, if you can, to sell the company, why someone should be an investor with you.
Well, thank you. So I think the first point to make is the Chancho project will be extremely cash flow accretive to the country, to the company, as well as very value accretive to shareholders in the equity basis. We have the ability as a company to deliver the project, so we mitigate the biggest single risk to someone in building a project somewhere. And also Ethiopia as a country, I think most people will agree, is one of the most exciting on a macroeconomic basis and a microeconomic basis, one of the most exciting jurisdictions in Africa to be leveraged to. And that's, you know, a very high level of leverage in our company to that wonderful theme.
Right. And I see here, as a note here on the RNS, we've established a joint venture with Orchid and are presently working on projects in Ethiopian resource space and hope to announce further news on these in the near future. So listen, Carl, I don't want you being a stranger. All right, fella? I want you coming on here and telling us about that, all right?
Will do. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you very much for speaking to us, Carl. Speak soon, hopefully.
Okay, wonderful. Bye-bye.
Okay, before Dan comes up, smudge Dan, today's penny stock with potential is suggested by Richard Oil. What's the name and ticker symbol of the penny stock with potential? Red Emperor Resources, RMP is the ticker. What does this company do? Oil and gas exploration. Would you say this is a short, medium-term or long-term investment? Short to medium-term investment with potential to multi-bag on an operational news flow. How many shares does this company have in issue? 425 million. What's the current price and market capitalization of the company? It's 4.25 million market cap. Current share price 1.02. I just checked this out actually. It's dropped a little bit, just below a penny now, 0.95 I think it was. List three reasons why you think this company has potential. Number one, 6 million quid in cash. Really? With no debt and a market cap of around 40%. Number two, existing assets in Georgia and the Philippines have potential to become company-making. And reason three, experienced management to execute deal flow in depressed sectors. That's Red Emperor Resources. Please do, you know, do your own research on this. This, you know, could be your opinion. It could be made up. You never know. But do your own research there. But that's suggested by Richard Oyle. And by all means, if you think you know of a penny stock with potential, please click the link at sharepickers.com and fill in the form. It takes 5 minutes and I can feature your stock in the next few days. Joining me on the podcast now is Smudge Dan. That's how he's known on Twitter. Thanks, Dan, for joining me.
No problem, Justin. Pleasure to be here.
Now, a lot of people said, you want to speak to this guy? And I got quite a few requests because I'm, you know, the direction of the podcast is evolving all the time. I talk to CEOs and I talk to people who tip stocks. And now it's gone on the road of investors, successful investors, traders. And you come into that bracket because you've been suggested quite a few times. So, Dan, I'm very happy to hear about your story. So, first of all, let's start back. When did you first start investing in stocks and shares?
Well, it was in 2004. My company at the time had a share save scheme, so I bought into that. And that did pretty well, actually. Over the next few years, that kind of doubled in size. I then started taking out an ISA in 2007, so I just went into a fund with Invesco Perpetual, and that kind of bumbled along, didn't do anything spectacular. And then it was probably in around 2011 I started to get interested in the AIM market. You know, I saw some of the gains that were being made there. And so I sort of went in two-footed, just went in there and started dabbling in that. Yeah. So it wasn't a huge amount of money to start off with. I had about a total of 45,000 pounds, 30,000 of which was in...
Yeah.
No, it was kind of built up over all those years up to 2011, and 30,000 of that was in an ISA. But at the time, you couldn't put AIM wasn't acceptable to ISAs,
right. Mm-hmm.
Unless it was a dual listed company. So and they tended to be mostly resource companies. So my £30,000 that was in an ISA went pretty much into all dual listed resource companies, which didn't do particularly well.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It's funny, the route you took there, because it's very similar to me. I mean, I've always been in stocks and shares for years, and then I went through active period. I remember the dot-com bubble and crash and sort of, and I lost a bit of money there, and then I sort of, pulled back a bit. Then I got into a company share save scheme and also then evolved into individual stocks, and it goes, and also I've been in funds, and when I first started doing this podcast, actually, I've got quite a few funds in my portfolio, but I've evolved, like you say, into the small cap arena, because you see, you know, and you have to sort of know the stuff a little bit, know the game. But you can earn some, you know, phenomenal returns from small caps if you know what you're doing, can't you?
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I went into it with not very much knowledge, really. And the stuff that I put in AIM, you know, some of it did okay, some of it didn't. It kind of bumbled along. I didn't really see any fantastic returns. As I say, the ISA money kind of dropped pretty rapidly. And then I thought, well, I need to kind of change the strategy a little bit here. So it was around sort of 2012.
Yeah.
I sort of tried to pick out a few companies, and one of which was a company called Westminster Security Group, which I think a couple of the guys that have been on previously were in as well. And that did very well, actually. I mean, that was sort of around 25, 30p when I bought in, and it went up and up and up, and it was up at 95p. And I thought, well, I've cracked this. I'm doing fantastically.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, it didn't last, and then it started dropping back to the point where by the time I'd sold those and just decided to cut my losses, I was probably down, you know, 70% on my initial stake. So it was a real roller coaster.
Yeah.
And I just decided that it was time to sort of throw in the towel on that one and just completely revisit my entire strategy as to what I was doing and the sort of companies that I was going to invest in.
Yeah. So what did you change? How did you change it? What did you do?
Well, I looked at the companies that I had done well in, and the common theme actually was that it was the really small companies that could offer you the exponential returns. And I guess, you know, the reason behind that if you've got a sub £1 million market cap company and they can turn a profit of say 100,000, you know, each 100,000 on a profit to earn ratio of 10 is worth $1 million to the market cap in theory. So that's going to be worth much more to a company that's got a 1 or 2 million market cap than it is to one of 10 million. So I just had a real focus. I really looked quite carefully into all of the companies that are out there that kind of find a sub 5 million market cap companies, generally not the resource sector because, well, not only was it struggling, but, you know, a lot of those just struggle to turn in any sort of profit. So I looked at the sort of the technology companies or some of the investment companies and just had a really, you know, spent a lot of time, a hell of a lot of time researching.
Yeah, and that's the key, isn't it? So basically, you focused, you know, your circle of competence a little bit. And so how many stocks do you say you hold at the moment?
At the moment, I've got about 15 stocks. It kind of varies. It goes up and down. I mean, and the amounts that I have in each of vary massively. I mean, what I've tried to do and what's been fairly successful for me at least is on the smaller cap stuff, I've tried to take a meaningful percentage of the company. So up to 3% in general. There's only one company I've gone over 3% on, which I'll talk to you about later on. But it makes a big difference if you have a sizable percentage, I think.
Yeah, so that's right. I'm trying to whittle down my portfolio to try and focus on companies I know more about. And like I say, it's really hard to keep track. I think anything over 10 properly, you know, and read up on any more than 10 companies, I think. And sometimes you've got lots of news coming out and you get caught up in the hype a little bit and you obscures the facts sometimes.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so we were on Twitter earlier, yesterday, the day before. I said, so how have you done? What have you done? And you mentioned a phenomenal trade you made earlier in the year. And I remember seeing this happening and I thought, oh, and it's one of those things that everyone sees and thought, why wasn't I in that? You know, take us through that one.
Yeah, so it's a company called Mirchow Capital, and they are effectively a sort of junior venture capitalist, I suppose. And the business itself, you know, it turns a very small profit. But what interested me was that they had some involvement in UK solar. So they had a company within them called Northfield Solar that they had a share of, and they were looking at sort of large scale solar plants within the UK. I'd spotted that there was some planning permission due on one of these sites, and I kept kind of tabs on it and when it was going to come up. And I bought in quite heavily. I bought in just shy of 3% of that one, around about 1p. The planning permission got approved, and after that, it just went crazy. I mean, I think it peaked at about 12p. So it was in August this year. It was a very surreal day.
Yeah. So do you mind saying how much you had in that?
Yeah, I had a total of £30,000, give or take, in that. And I didn't sell it all at the top because it was a really mad day. But I walked away with a profit of about £150,000 from that trade.
That's a nice couple of days' work. So how long were you invested in that company for before that happened?
I'd been in it for a while, actually. I knew it was going, you know, this planning permission thing kind of, because there was two sites, and the first site it came up a year or so before. So I'd had a much smaller holding in there. But once I realised that the D-Day for this plan, the second planning permission, was coming shortly, that's when I went in big. So I hadn't, you know, I probably went in large about sort of 3 or 4 weeks before the date.
Yeah, well, do you know what? It is true, isn't it? Well, a lot of people have come on here, traders, investors, say they always invest with their eye on a milestone, a news milestone that's going to happen, you know? And so Absolutely. If you get in early, pretty much, and just hang around and wait for that to happen, because and there will be a bit of noise here and there, in between then, now and then, but it's that one milestone. And if you do your research on companies, you'll know this, won't you? And that's the thing to do, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, there really is no point in just, especially in AIM shares, just sitting in the hope that something may happen. I think, you know, there has to be a strategy behind all of these trades, because it really is dead money. And generally speaking, with AIM, it will just sort of drop back over time. If there's nothing happening, it will drop back and back and back. So, you know, you're not only losing money, but you're not utilizing that money effectively.
Yeah, it's the dreaded spike, which you see so often in small cap stocks, and you find people, and this is, you know, a lot of people do this. I've done it. Everyone, it jump in on the spike when you think there's still more to go, and then you get spiked, and that's why, I suppose, that accounts for so many people losing money. I can't think of the percentages, but I've heard anything from 75% to 90-odd% of people lose money on AIM, and I think that it's only down to the price at which you purchase a stock, isn't it? And if you purchase at the wrong time, when there's a lot of froth, a lot of hot air, a lot of emotion, then you will get spikes. It's all about getting it at the right price, isn't it, essentially?
Exactly. That's exactly right.
So what are you, I mean, do you still hold any in that now?
I sold my last few the other day, actually. I mean, the price has dropped back quite considerably. They had some issues over funding. I think, obviously, the government are not particularly keen on large-scale solar. It may come back into life at some point in the future, but equally it may not. And I just think there's better options out there now.
Yeah.
So that's gone, that one. It's all about finding the next one now.
Yeah. So if someone's listening to this now and they are, you know, where you were, say, you know, a couple of years back, they're thinking of getting into AIM and looking around. Is there any bits of advice that really stand out and you think, you know, because I often say on the podcast, you know, cliches in investing are cliches for a reason. It's because they have a ring of truth to them, you know. But is there any like that you think you should, you know, and we all often ignore a cliche comes, you know, out all the time. But it's even, you know, recently about New World Oil and Gas today. I mean, you know, it ramped up the last few days, and then we got the actual news of what was happening with the RNS, and it dropped back by 15%, you know? And so it's almost like that.
Yeah.
It's a cliche there, buy on rumour, sell on fact, isn't there? But is there anything that sticks out in your mind? Is there one point lesson you think you'd give to someone?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've got to kind of move with the trends for a start. I mean, at the moment, for example, you know, I'm not really considering any resource companies. I mean, it doesn't really fit my strategy for a start. So I'm, you know, there are some good ones out there, and I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But equally, for my strategy, you know, I work full time, so I can't research all of the resource companies that are out there. If I focus on a particular sector, or if I just say non-resource and companies below 5 million, then I can spend much more time researching all those companies properly, doing a proper job on that. And then if I'm going to make a big investment, then I go in that with the knowledge that I've done a proper job researching it.
Yeah, that's so, it. Focus, isn't it, really? And because there are, like I said, I don't know how many companies on AIM, thousands, and you can completely lose track. And that's, I set up filters exactly like that, under 5 million. In fact, I brought it down even less than that. I brought it down to like under 3 million, and put shares in issue as well as a consideration, and just trying to get them down to a manageable amount, you know. But then after a while, you see certain companies come out time and time again, and you hear bits of news, and then you zero in and focus in on them. And so it's pretty much, you have to know your circle of competency and focus in. Isn't that the case?
Absolutely. Yeah, you've got to focus on, you know, whether it's a particular industry that you've got some familiarity with, or it's something that's, you know, kind of a hot industry like fintech or something at the moment. You have to think forward and think, you know, what is going to be the trigger point here?
Yeah.
I mean, one of my key things is that these days I very rarely invest in companies that are not either turning a profit at the time, but with the potential to increase that exponentially, or, you know, are virtually on the, you know, on the verge of turning a profit. Because, you know, the biggest, or one of the biggest problems, I think, with AIM is that there's huge discounted placings going on left, right and centre, and they only seem to be getting bigger. And the feeling I'm getting is that finance is much, much more difficult to come by these days. So I can only see that placing situation getting worse. And there's nothing worse than being on the end of a 50% discounted placing.
No, I know. It's the big P word, I know. People dread that on AIM. So let's focus in then on a stock that you hold. You mentioned this earlier. I think you have a 3% in. And why are you into it? What is it and why
are
you
into it? Yeah, sure. Well, I have two big holdings at the moment, one of which is one that's been mentioned on here a few times before, which is Paragon Entertainment, which I'm quite excited about, mm-hmm. Which I have just shy of 3% of. But the one I want to focus on today is a company called Box Hill Technology.
Yeah, I know. They're on my watch list. I like them. And the chart looks cracking. In fact, too strong on what's the price in that. So why are you into Box Hill?
Yeah, well, I started buying Box Hill. It was around about 0.1. And I bought about 2% of the company because I could see that they were kind of turning things around. They were sort of edging towards a profit. And I've actually averaged up considerably since then. I'm up to just shy of 4% now, and I've been buying, up to this week. And what I like about it, I mean, there's various facets to the business, but there's two in particular that I'm really focusing in on. And I think are going to be kind of game changers for the company. One of which is that they provide technology for larger companies for payment processing. Mm-hmm. And they tend to be gambling companies like Ladbrokes or Coral or somebody like that. So they will provide the technology to facilitate the payments, and off the back of that, they will earn a very tiny percentage of each transaction that goes through. So if it's football betting or things like that, they're earning off the back of that. What it does do is it makes their business somewhat seasonal on that. So when the football season's on, they do very well. When the football season finishes, they've had a lot of new customers come on board this year. They've signed a couple of big deals per the last RNS. And it's just incredibly cheap even at the moment. I mean, they're predicting profits for the year ended 31st of July of between 600 and 650,000. Wow. And it's going to be net profit because they've got some tax losses they can put up against it. And they had some revenue which kind of fell into the current year. So I'm anticipating, I'm hoping that they're going to achieve a profit of about £500,000 for the quarter that's just finished. Mm. And that, we've got a market cap at the moment of about £5 million. I mean, it's to me, it's just very, very cheap on a business that is growing rapidly.
Yeah. So you said you got in it. I mean, I'm looking at the chart here, a yearly chart. And you started getting in at 0.1, and now they're today at 0.35. So that's nice, first and foremost. And you can see almost a bit of consolidation going on in the share price here. But do you have a target? I mean, is there a what will make you get out of these, for example?
Well, I've kind of raised my target as the news has come out. I would probably sell somewhere around the 1p mark, but I would still keep a fairly core holding. I mean, it sounds incredibly bullish, but I've got hopes of this company being a £50 million market cap in time, just with the business that they've got. I mean, the payment processing thing is one aspect of it. They've also got something called Casino Cash, which effectively is like a cash machine in a casino. But because, obviously, if you're withdrawing cash, you're usually limited by the bank to £500 a day. If you go to a casino, you enter your card and they give you a voucher and you can go and exchange it for chips for a vastly higher amount. And again, the business model is such that the Box Hill will take a percentage of that. So that's kind of in development at the moment of it. But I think once that gets going, along with the payment processing, I think that, we've got a really good business.
Yeah. And do you worry about pullbacks at all? I mean, is it only one-way traffic? I mean, are you just scaling in, or do you sometimes scale out if you're going to see a little spike or whatever?
I've done it once or twice, but it's more of a long-term investment. I wouldn't rule out going over 4%. I mean, I'm pretty heavily in there now for a small company, so I'm guessing I'll probably leave it at that. But you know, that, and we talk about, you know, upcoming news, and the upcoming news on this is that they had suggested their results would be coming out in November. I think that that might get put back now because the chairman sold a few shares after that announcement. So there's going to be a, you know, that's within the notification period. So I think that will get put back. But I'm expecting a trading update in November for the past quarter. And I think that will be the catalyst. I think once people see the profit that's delivered, you know, it's going to look incredibly cheap.
Nice. So, you say you started off at 45 grand. And judging by my shoddy maths here, I mean, how, in percentage terms, how much have you increased that by?
It's probably about 1,300%, something like that.
Oh, wow. That's good, Dan, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really happy. I mean, it's obviously I was badly down following the Westminster incident, yeah, as we should call it. But yeah, I mean, obviously, I'm delighted to be able to turn it around, and I think, you know, I can see quite a clear path, hopefully, with the companies that I'm now heavily into. Barring any major surprises, I'm very hopeful for the future.
Yeah, well, Dan, it's lovely to chat to you. And do you know what? You can come on again, and you know, and I like it, because what I've taken from this is pretty much what I'm trying to do is narrow down my portfolio into more focused stocks, you know, and take bigger positions in companies, you know, you're comfortable with. And I it's odd, because I normally used to worry about putting money into even a smaller amount into a stock I didn't know much about, you know. But now I'm quite happier putting a larger amount of money into a company I pretty much know a lot more of, and so nothing's, you know, unless the management are not speaking truthfully, which hopefully comes with the research and you discover that anyway, you don't have these surprises that come out of left field that will knock the share price silly, you know. So you get to know the company so well, you get to know the, and also because I do the podcast with people I chat to CEOs, and you get a feel for them, you know. So I feel more confident about putting lots more money in a company I really know, and I think that's the key, isn't it? Just get to know the company really well.
Totally. And you know, if you can attend the AGMs, if you're going to put a lot of money into a company, you want to meet the individuals, you want to talk to the individuals, you want to be able to sort of suss them out and make sure that that they are genuine in what they're saying. So I completely agree with you, that is the way forward. And you know, if you're comfortable, then you're going to be comfortable putting that sort of money in.
Marvellous. Dan, lovely to chat to you, and come on again soon, all right?
I'll be delighted to. Thanks, Justin.
That's it for the podcast. Apart from to say, this podcast is dedicated to BOS1, or Boss One, who gave me this 5-star rating and this review on iTunes. And I've now got over 105 5-star reviews on iTunes. And also, I'm now in the... by the way, I'm now... Thank you for listening. Thank you if you have given me a rating and a recommendation, because it's working. I am now in the What's Hot section on the investment section on iTunes, and there's some pretty big names up there. So I thank you for that, if you give me a rating and review. Anyway, BOS1 says, a useful listen for all investors and wannabe investors in the AIM market. Enjoy hearing the various different company CEOs and learning about their companies and the successful investor traders like Dan today, who offer a good sense of advice in playing this minefield. A light-hearted weekend session brings a nice balance. A very enjoyable and interesting listening. Good stuff, fella. In brackets, go Prem. PREM. I see. Premier African Minerals. Do your own research. Thank you for that. And please do give me a review. And it does help, you know, on the search engine that is iTunes at the moment. It helps very much indeed. I do appreciate that. So thank BOS. And don't forget, don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation on the podcast. Please do your own research. Thank you for listening. Speak tomorrow. Much appreciated.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.